Welcome aboard the Story Ark. I'm your captain, Kenny Mears, and let's take a voyage together. The world is full of stories of bizarre animal killings, from animals ripped in half to others drained entirely of blood. These unusual deaths lead to all kinds of stories of what could have possibly done such a thing, from aliens to the vampiric cryptid, the Chupacabra. One such story takes place in Appalachia, and left people afraid and baffled. Here's friend of the show Elizabeth Gibson here to share the story of the Beast of Bladen County.
Hello, my name's Elizabeth Atkinson Gibson, and I am a professional storyteller, have been for about 6 years. I love telling folk tales, personal narratives, and especially stories centered in the South, which is my native land. So, in my native South, there are three types of spooky tales. The first type are haint tales or ghost stories, hauntings of persons, places, or things. The second type are stories of conjure women or the witches of the South. The third type are booger tales. Those are the legends and folklore about supernatural types of beasts with unusual abilities, and they are usually pretty scary. This tale is going to be a booger tale. It takes place in my native state, North Carolina, and it's called The Beast of Bladen County. So, the southern border of Bladen County lies about 41 miles northwest of the town of Wilmington. Wilmington, which was settled during colonial times, is situated near the coast and on the banks of the Cape Fear River. The Cape Fear River gets its beginnings at the ocean and then runs in a northwesterly direction past Wilmington through New Hanover County and into the farmlands of Bladen. Along its banks and waterways are many bogs and swamps, teeming with flora and fauna of diversity that is incredible. It is a place of great beauty and danger. For instance, it's home to the water moccasin, a poisonous snake that slithers along the shoreline, often appearing like a floating reed or twig. Its venomous bite is deadly. In the middle of the 20th century, there were also alligators in some of these parts, and many wild and bobcats. Now, there are also stories and legends about a mythological creature that dwelt in these lands. The Cherokee called it the Devil Cat, a gigantic, inky creature, muscular, and as tall as a man when it stood on its hind legs. Its glaring laser eyes could blind a human with just one look. Then, when the early European settlers came, they also had their own tales of a similar creature they called the Wampus, or the Golly Wampus. They blamed it for strings of livestock deaths throughout the area whenever it was on the prowl. They also accused it of occasionally stealing children. But those are legends and folklore, and untrue, right? Our story begins on December 29th, 1953, outside of the little town of Clarkton in Bladen County. One early evening, a woman was in her kitchen cleaning up after dinner when all of a sudden she heard tremendous howling and wailing and baying of all the hunting dogs on all the properties round about, including her own. The cacophony grew so loud that she ran to the kitchen window and looked out to see what might be the matter. There on her neighbor's backyard, she saw this giant, inky black creature, muscular and almost feline in appearance, slinking its way across the backyard and slithering into the woods. She dropped what she was doing, ran to the phone, called the police, and said, "Y'all better get over here. There's something afoot in the woods." And they came and found nothing. That was the first sighting of the beast. That night, the slaughters began. First, one dog was killed on a farm in the area, and then over on the Voss's farmland. That family went to bed as usual that night, leaving the two huge hunting dogs on the porch to sleep as they always did. When right about 10:30 at night, they heard an enormous shriek from one of their dogs, howling and howling. They all jumped up, ran to the front door, flung the door open, and then Johnny Voss said, there in front of him was one of his hunting dogs. He said it was, quote, torn to ribbons. And around the body of the dog were great globs of saliva like nothing they had ever seen before. Heartbroken, the family went and got a sheet, put the poor dog on the sheet, rolled and wrapped him up, stuck him on a corner of the porch in order to bury him the next day. Calmed down the other hunting dog, and then retired to their beds to sleep again. Deep in the night, the thing came back. Evil returned to slither up onto the porch, grab the body of that dead dog, and take it back into the woods. The other hunting dog lay a whimpering. And then around 2:30 in the morning, there was a horrific doggy shriek, and then quiet. The entire family leapt out of beds, came running to the door, flung it open, and the second dog was gone, as was the body of the first dog. About 3 days later, on a neighboring property, the bodies of the two dogs were found, skulls crushed flat, and great gobs and slatherings of saliva all over their bodies. Johnny Voss said, it was like some creature had carried those two dogs in its mouth. Over the next week, which was the first week of January 1954, 8 more dogs were slaughtered, all of them violently torn apart, heads flattened, and then an interesting thing. A farm veterinarian took several of those dogs and did autopsies on them. And he said, quote, there was not more than one or two drops of blood among them. They were drained of their bodily fluids. Now the people in the surrounding areas began to talk and jabber. What could this be? There were no bears or panthers in the area. The predators in the area weren't big enough to do such damage. What could it be? Could it be a wampus? Was there a devil cat afoot? Others said, well, maybe it was a vampire beast of some kind. There were similar reports 2 decades before when similar disappearances and violent animal deaths had happened in Piedmont, North Carolina. But that was all folklore, wasn't it? Well, whatever it was, that thing wasn't done yet. On January 7th, a goat was found in a barn that was open, head flattened, drained of blood. And then worst of all, over on the Kinlaw farm on January 8th, a young woman had gone out right before dark was to fall, to get her washing off the clothesline and take it in before it froze overnight. Her back to the forest, she was busy working before dark fell, when suddenly, on the back of her neck, she felt her hair stand on end. Goosebumps began to cover her arms and her legs. She knew she was being watched. Very slowly, she began to turn her head to look over her shoulder at the wood line. And there, barely concealed by some undergrowth, was the beast. It was long as a man is tall, muscular, sleek, with feline features and glowing eyes that were boring right into her. She shrieked, grabbed the rest of her laundry, ran into the house, closed the door, locked it, and picked up the phone. She called the police and said, "Y'all better get down here. I saw it, and it was about to pounce on me." And came they did. But by the time they were there, it was gone. Now in the nighttime, people began to have reports of hearing a crazy calling in the night from the woods, and it went like this. Some people said it was like the wailing of a human infant. And they believed it was the beast, because it didn't start until he was afoot. Leaders of the community there began to be extremely worried, because now it was obvious whatever it was stalking humans because of the events on the Kinlow farm. So the following week, they organized search parties every single night, and every night, more and more hunters came to walk shoulder to shoulder through the countryside, rifles aloft, into the woods, making a ruckus, ready to do battle with the beast. And sometimes they would stop and listen. They would follow the sound into the woods, but by the time they got near the sound, it stopped, and they found nothing. Finally, towards the end of the week, local leaders were pretty exhausted from the experience. So when one hunter showed up on the Friday night, he caught himself something, was claiming it was the beast, they were ready to latch on to it. And so they made an announcement. The beast was found. And what did he catch? A bobcat. Yeah. A bobcat, all of about 2 feet long. Now, bobcats have never been known to drain the blood from their prey or leave giant gobs of saliva anywhere that they were. Nor have they the capacity to crush flat the skull of animals larger than they. As weak as the explanation was, town leadership was ready to receive it, and so they announced it. The beast was dead. They took pictures of the hunter and the speckled dead cat, and they hoped that was that. And for a time, the slaughter stopped. People began to breathe a little easier. But then, in December of 1954, over in Robeson County, which is about 15, 16 miles as the crow flies from Bladenboro and Clarkton, one farmer got up in the morning to feed his livestock. And there, in their corral, he found 5 large hogs, skulls crushed, 3 chickens decapitated, and all covered with saliva and not a drop of blood. The people of Bladen County breathed a sigh of relief. The beast was yonder and not with them. But the people in Robeson now became terrified. But the whole thing stopped about as quickly as it had begun a year before. No more killings. Now you may wonder, was it a wampus? A devil cat? Was it a vampire beast? Or another little bobcat? Whatever it was, they don't know and won't until killings start again someday. Now, lest you think I made this whole thing up, you travel down to Bladenborough the last week of October, where they have the Beast Fest and celebrate all things monster-related. Fun for the whole family. And even some old-timers show up and tell the story of the events of 1953 and 54, all in an attempt to keep the story alive of their very own monster. The Beast of Bladen County.
The Story Arc is a production of Food for Thought Audio. This episode was written, produced, and edited by me, Kenny Mears. We'd like to thank today's storyteller, Elizabeth Atkinson Gibson, for sharing her story. Elizabeth is a member of the Utah Storytelling Guild and a professional storyteller. You can find more information on her website, thetellerist.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, or wherever you listen to podcasts for more content. And until next time, thanks for listening.